Atlanta, Georgia, and we will have the coaches work from the Area Agency on Aging.
This is Gary Cook in Akron. We also will have the coaches working from the Area Agency on Aging, and we are an ADRC as well and can help the other populations.
This is Sharon from Cincinnati, and our coaches will also be from our organization, the Area Agency on Aging. We are an ADRC, can provide the same type of support. And we also are picking up individuals with multiple chronic conditions, so those with renal disease would fall into that category.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pamela. Operator, next question.
Your next question comes from Deborah. Please state your full name and organization. Your line is open.
Thank you. This is Deborah Cagle from CalOptimum, California. And you gave us two areas to focus on, structure and partnerships. I'm wondering if there are additional areas of focus that you've seen some gaps in the application, and if you can also tell us you know, what the number of applications are in the queue, give us an idea of what wait time is before we would come up in the queue, and if you can share with us a percentage that were declined or told to go back and work some more and resubmit.
Hi, this is Juliana Tiangson. I'm trying to remember all those questions. We can't give out numbers of applications received, numbers rejected. We are accepting applications on a rolling ongoing basis, and you know, estimate that generally from the time we get an application in, there's about approximately 3 weeks before it would get issued to probably 3 to 4 weeks before we go to a panel for review. And then there's generally a couple of weeks after that review before notification would occur.
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
Some months we have, you know, four panels. Some months we have two. It just really depends on application flow. Let me see. Oh, so the areas we really did try and highlight here are, you know, making sure that the applicant has previous experience in care transition services. This program is really meant to come in and provide a sustainable funding stream for an organization that has some experience providing these kind of services. And by being a part of this program, they could continue and even expand those services. So just to be clear that this really isn't for people that are just getting started. In terms of experience, it doesn't have to be, it could just be having completed a small pilot, but we do need to see some evidence of experience. The other critically important thing is the root cause analysis, that it's a community-specific root cause analysis and that the applicant isn't just citing national studies, and that root cause analysis then directs the targeting of the beneficiaries and the selection of the intervention. So there has to be that tie back from the intervention selection back to the results of the root cause analysis. Structure is an important thing. Again, we have a strong preference for multiple hospitals in a community partnering with a community-based organization and pulling in downstream providers as well. Because we're getting that, as you can see with the seven selected sites, really the only applications that are considered with a partnership of just one hospital and one community-based organization are those that are in a very rural area where there literally are no other acute care hospitals to bring into the partnership. I think that those are the key points, and just making sure that you're clear on who the board is of your community-based organization, if they are the applicant, that they meet those requirements of multiple stakeholders, healthcare stakeholders, and consumer representatives.
Thank you, Deborah. Operator?
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Ruth. Please state your first and last name as well as organization. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Ruth Ratzlip with Aging and In-Home Services. That Lawrence Gross, when he spoke, he said he did his root cause analysis utilizing some, looking at the readmission drivers, utilizing the PEPPER report and the HCAP. I don't know what those are. Could you tell me? Where do you get them from?
PEPPER reports are a report that goes to the hospitals from CMS. And the HCAPs are patient satisfaction reports that are done by the hospitals.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. Operator?
Your next question comes from the line of Emily. Please state your first and last name as well as your organization. Your line is now open.
Emily Kearns, Greater Lynn Senior Services. My question is, if we are submitting an application on behalf of our ADRC and our partners in that group, and the lead agency is a legal entity, is that sufficient, or does the ADRC require legal to be a legal entity?
So the CBO, the community-based, if it's a community-based organization that's the primary applicant, they must be a legal entity that can receive payment. They must be the ones that have the governing board with multiple healthcare stakeholders, including consumers. If it's an area agency on aging, a governmentally based one, we have a frequently asked question on this topic. There is, in the case of a governmentally based AAA, there is a provision that in terms of the multiple healthcare stakeholders and consumers, that requirement was determined to be met by virtue of the governing board being elected officials. Therefore, those elected officials inherently represent the consumers and multiple healthcare stakeholders in the communities they serve. One other important piece is that the community-based organization must be physically located in the community that it proposes to serve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Operator?
Your next question comes from line of Carrie. Please state your full name and your organization. Your line is open. And Carrie, if your line is on mute, please unmute your line.
Oh, hello?
Hi, you're on the line.
Okay, I'm sorry. We didn't think we had a mute button. Sorry for that. This is Katie Van Connett from St. Mary Mercy in Livonia, Michigan. And some of you had already touched on the topic, but specific to the target population, we were interested in learning more about your focus diagnoses. It sounds like most of you were really focused in on those three major diagnoses of CHF, AMI, and pneumonia, but we were wondering if that was an inclusive list or if you had expanded further than that.
This is Roseanne DiStefano. No, we expanded far beyond the three major diagnoses, and we really based it on what we were finding in the root cause analysis.
Okay.
This is Larry Gross in Southern Maine. We also did not make that an exclusive list. We really used the diagnoses that were represented in the Coleman model.
This is Heather O'Donnell. We focused on the three diagnoses in addition to any other chronic medical conditions. We're really focusing it on the need of the patient.
This is Sharon from Cincinnati. We focused on the three diagnoses. We added multiple chronic because the data showed that high number of our individuals didn't have one of the three as an admitting, but they had multiple chronic conditions. We also added mental health and modified an intervention for individuals who had mental health issues because we found that they were not able to participate in the Coleman intervention, but yet there was a significant number of them that came up in our pilot, and so we partnered with our mental health board to help them find a medical home that could help them after they were released from or discharged from the hospital.
This is Gary Cook in Akron. We focused on the three primarily because of the commonality of data and the difficulty in tracking readmissions on the broader base diagnoses when the readmissions were sort of secondary and tertiary causes to sort of keep the data clean.
Atlanta, Georgia, and we are focusing on the three diagnoses.
And same thing in Phoenix, the three diagnoses, and also maybe individuals with a past history of repeat admissions.
This is Sharon from Cincinnati again. I would also add one of the reasons why we limited ourselves to a certain degree was also because of what the volumes were showing and wanting to make sure that we could sufficiently staff the hospitals with the transition coaches and not try and take on more than we knew we could handle.
Thank you,
Katie, and thank you, everyone. Operator, we have time for one more question.
Okay, so your final question today comes from the line of Elizabeth. Please state your first and last name as well as organization. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Jones, and I'm from Health Call Providers in Oregon. And I was hoping you could provide a little more information about the examples of the community-based collaborations. I was struggling to understand the different coalitions or a primary care practice that does house calls, and we've been tracking hospital ER visits and readmissions, and we have care coordination, but we're trying to figure out, these all seem to be very large scale with multiple hospitals, and just trying to figure out what is meant by the coalition.
Yeah, this is Juliana. So the idea is to have a community approach here. So I think you said you're a small primary care office. And basically, the idea is to bring in as many medical and social service providers in your community that touch the same pool of beneficiaries into the partnership as possible. We understand that it can't bring in everyone, but just want to see a good representation of the providers in the community. And then just to qualify to be eligible as a CBO, it goes back to the points of being a legal entity that can receive payment from CMS, having experience in the provision of care transition services, being physically located in the community you propose to serve, and having a governing body with multiple healthcare stakeholders, including consumers. Sometimes new entities need to be formed because they don't currently exist in every community or in every state. And I would encourage you to reach out to your QIO in your region, because as of August 1st, as part of the townscape of work, the QIOs are tasked with assisting interested applicants for this program, convening communities, convening these kind of collaborative partnerships, assisting with root cause analysis, and so forth. So I would just like to encourage everyone to reach out to their local QIO. I've also heard that a lot of people have been reaching out to these seven sites for asking for technical assistance, and clearly they can't provide technical assistance as they're going to be focused on implementing their programs for this project. But the QIOs are tasked with this, and they are available to help. One other thing I just wanted to touch on that I'm sure it's people waiting in the queue that didn't get to ask their question about budget. I just wanted to stress that this is not a grant program. I know this was said in the early portion of the call. This really is not a grant program, and that's a common problem we see with applications where the budget includes a lot of indirect costs, infrastructure costs, equipment, space, training costs, all kinds of ancillary positions around the position, around the FTE that would actually be providing a care transition service to an eligible beneficiary. So just wanted to stress to everyone to keep in mind that we're testing a new service for high-risk Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries, and as such, we can really only pay for the service that's being provided to the beneficiary. So these infrastructure costs, I mean, if this is ever to become a permanent benefit, care transition services, we certainly cannot cover people's infrastructure costs. And just to mention again, this is meant to build on previous experience. It's not for organizations that are just getting started. Hence, that's why we're not paying for training in this particular program.
Great. Thank you, Juliana, and thank you, Elizabeth, for your question. At this time, we're going to wrap up today's call, and I will turn it over to Dr. Paul McGann and Dennis Wagner for any closing comments that they might have.
Hi, Ray. Do you think we have like 60 seconds, or how much time do we have?
60 seconds.
Okay. Well, we won't actually do it, but we'll tell you if we have another one of these calls what we will do. We'd like to start shifting. We thought today's call was great, and we love the interaction between the community that wants to join these seven and the seven people that have put so much hard work into it, and we thank them for appearing on this call. Dennis and I both just think it was spectacular, and what we want to do is give you a preview next time. We think this was very helpful, but of course we don't have feedback from you. And so when we design this program next time, in addition to you asking us questions and you asking the seven questions, we're going to ask you questions. And we're going to ask things like, what did you hear in today's call that was most powerful and helpful to you? And what more would you hear that would help you to be successful in the future? So even though we don't have time to actually do that right now because of the interest, I did want to say that we're very interested in your feedback, and we're very interested in sort of interacting with you more so that we can maximize the success of the audience on the call. Dennis, do you want to bring us home here?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. McGann. And I would just like to close the call by asking a question. We won't have an opportunity to collect answers today, but I'd like you to develop your answer to this question. And that question is, what action am I going to take as a result of what I heard on this call today? What action am I going to take as a result of what I heard on this call today? And I hope for a lot of you that action will be to team up with others in the community to advance applications to the 3026 program, because we want a lot more, and we want really good ones, and we want to get this ball rolling just as fast as we can to improve care, improve transitions of care, reduce readmissions, and save the nation billions of dollars. And we've got that potential, all of us, as part of this growing and emerging community practice. But thank you, and thanks especially to our seven guests. We're delighted that you're in the program, and we're delighted that you're already teaming with each other and with the emerging community of practice to spread what works and what was successful for you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Dr. McGann and Dennis. Just a few housekeeping items here. If you do have any comments, or if you did have a question and were unable to ask your question, please feel free to email the Care Transitions email box. That is caretransitions@cms.hhs.gov. I want to thank everyone for joining today's call. I especially also want to thank the seven sites for sharing their invaluable insights. Summaries of those seven selected sites are posted online at go.gov. cms.gov/caretransitions. And there will also be a transcript and a recording of today's call will be posted on the website. In addition, applications are still being accepted, and they're being accepted on a rolling basis. So again, thank you everyone for joining, and operator, that concludes our portion of the call.
As this does conclude today's conference call, you may now disconnect.